Hello, and welcome to the In Touch Mission International podcast, where you get to hear directly from ITMI partners. I'm your host, Summer Killey. For this episode, I'm sitting down with Kent Reisenauer and Steve Evers, our director, and we're talking about their recent mission trip to visit our partners in Uganda. They're sharing all kinds of stories from this trip. Funny things that happened along the way, exciting evidences of the Lord's work in people's lives and ministries, meaningful moments, some ways the Lord showed up and provided unexpectedly, and the many ways people have been able to make an impact in Uganda by sending the guys on these trips and supporting our partners' ministries. This episode is packed full of fun and rich conversation and good news. I don't want to delay getting to it any longer, so here's my conversation with Stephen Kent. Well, Stephen Kent, you just came home from a 2.5 week, I believe it was, time in Uganda and South Sudan, and it's a real treat to get to be able to sit down and just talk about some of the things that happened and the things that the Lord did while you were there. So I'm really excited to be doing this with you guys.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thank you very much, Summer.
So let's kind of just jump right in, and we're going to start talking about your time in Uganda first. And I wanted to see if you would share what is something that was really surprising about your time in Uganda.
For me, I've been going to Uganda for as many as 15 years now. And to go back and to see our partners grow, it was just a real, real blessing to see Kuwaiti, who we've worked with for a lot of years, just to see some incredible growth in him, even in the midst of the challenges that he's got. This last year, he's had to deal with his wife. His wife is blind now because of her diabetes, and she's got some internal challenges that in essence, they pretty much know that she's not going to be around a long, long time. And so having to deal with someone in that condition in Uganda is just really, really difficult. Just getting them around, and there's not a lot of help. And so him being so consumed with that, and then the students at the school, as well as God laid on his heart to go a whole additional direction with a prison ministry and going in and actually revolutionize the inside of a prison by setting up a training school, he calls it Portable Bible School, and to give these prisoners a chance to get a diploma or a certificate, like they've accomplished something by going to school in the prison. That was amazing to me to see how, in the midst of everything, he's charging ahead. And his wife, his precious wife Lillian, said, "Go for it. You need to go for it. They need help in that prison." So that was exciting to me.
One of my most surprising things that I saw when I was over there, and I've only been there twice, so just think about over the last 1 year, the changes that you might see around you. And when I was over there at International School of Missions a year ago, it seemed to be somewhat chaotic. But God raised up a godly woman to help alongside Kuwaiti to build up International School of Missions. She has just taken the lead, and God has shown her how to orchestrate the International School of Missions so that they can raise pigs and chickens. And at the same time they're doing that, they are getting godly wisdom and teaching both from Kuwaiti and from the other teachers and pastors that are out there. Just wonderful to see.
And you know what's so interesting about that is Kuwaiti says many of these rural pastors are so poor and their churches are so small, they can't live, and their families can't live. And so they're so susceptible to this prosperity gospel that's decimating Uganda and quite frankly, a lot of Africa. And so Kuwaiti says as important as teaching them Bible and administration and all the things that they learn in the Bible school, they need to learn they can make some money. They can raise pigs or chickens or garden or do various things. And so he's giving them a real holistic education. And these are people that are so poor that they can't even pay to go to school. They can't even pay to rent a room. They sleep on the floor in one of the classrooms just so they can be at a Bible school.
And then, Steve, like you said, there's other ones that other students that come there, but think of how you have to get to International School of Missions. If you're in Kampala, you have to take a boat across the water. You have to take a boat, a motorcycle, I don't know, another 5-6 kilometers or more, and finally end up at the school. So it's really, the students that go there are yearning for the truth, and they're getting it.
And it sounds like they're willing to put a lot of their own effort out there to get it. That really speaks to the value that Kuwaiti is delivering.
Absolutely.
Great place.
So one of the things you guys got to do while you were in Uganda was to deliver some audio Bibles and transport the supporters' gifts of Bibles and purchase those and get them over to some of the people that have been involved with Kuwaiti's Bible school course in that prison. So what did it feel like to be able to do that?
We took a number of audio Bibles, both for the prisoners and also for the ISM students. But we also wanted to purchase printed Bibles while we were there. Well, you know, God tends to intervene on these things at times. So while we're there, we're thinking, Steve and I think, we're going to pay maybe $15 US dollars for a printed Bible or even more. Lo and behold, God provided Kuwaiti with somebody that would sell them to us for about $7 a printed Bible. So, just an amazing thing that we were allowed to get 100 printed Bibles. We were allowed to bring the printed Bibles into the prison and have them available to the prisoners as well as the guards. And we also took a number of Bibles out to International School of Missions for the students to use. They have a wonderful little library that's growing there at ISM, and these would be a great addition.
The audio Bibles and the regular Bibles just didn't go anything like I thought it was going to go. Kent did a great job working with Kuwaiti to locate and to get those printed Bibles, and to save that kind of money once we got there, because we were told before we went it was going to be $15, and so we planned for that, and we got over there, and when they were cheaper, that was great. But finding the guy and tying him down and getting him to deliver them, because nobody's got vehicles, and it was really quite funny, because the night that the guy brought the Bibles, he brought these two big boxes with I think 50 Bibles in each one of them. And they smelled. They were so, there was this smell coming off of them. Long story short, they were regular paperback Bibles that he cut leather-like bindings on the outside for him. And he sat there all afternoon with contact cement painting each Bible and painting each of the covers, so that they would have nice, durable, long-lasting covers on them. And it was cool enough that particular day because of the rain that the odor had not gone away from all of them. So Kent and I were looking through them to make sure that they were the right side up and that they had all the pages and that you check everything. And we were getting a little high. And we were laughing, having a good time about it. But the guy was excited about getting that many Bibles into somebody's hands, and we were excited about getting them. It was just kind of one of those funny things. But also, it didn't go like I thought when we got to the prison. I thought that those audio Bibles were going to be used as a kind of an adjunct to Kuwaiti's training, the portable Bible school in the prison. And Kuwaiti had kind of inferred that probably with some of the prisoners, but let's just say that when we checked in, of course you have to check in all your electronics, you have to check in everything so that you don't bring contraband into the prison. Well, the guards and all the leadership ushered us into the commanding commanding officers, the CO's office, and it became very apparent that the guards and the prison leadership were probably as much, if not more, interested in the audio Bibles than even the prisoners were. And so we had to adjust. We were going to give one to the commanding officer as a gift and as an appreciation for letting us come and for doing all that she's done for Kuwaiti. And let's just say that a few more of the audio Bibles were commandeered for personal purposes. And Kent and I both just looked at each other and said, hey, as long as somebody wants one that bad and is going to use it, then we'll get more. We'll get more. We'll take more back next time. So that was really exciting because the audio Bibles that we took, Kent did a super job because not only do they have English on them, but they have their local language on them. But then Kent also got what's called the African Mini Bible College. It's like this African Bible training that they can sit and listen to over and over and over again. And so the effect is just going to be huge.
Yeah, what an impact that's going to make. That's exciting.
But think about the going into a prison and the commanding officers and the prison guards are listening to the Bible, and the prisoners are walking by wondering what they're listening to. Shortly after, you know that the prisoners are going to want that audio Bible to listen to as well.
And the ones that didn't get reapportioned are in a library where both the guards and the other people there at the prison can check them out. The inmates can check them out for a period of time, listen to what they want to listen to, and then they, of course, check them back in.
On the Sunday, Steve preached, and there were a countless number of prisoners, both men and women, out in the courtyard listening. And you would look around, and I don't know, maybe, Steve, you might know, but maybe 10% of the population at most, maybe 5%, had a Bible that they could reference to. The other prisoners did not have a personal Bible. So the printed Bibles, the 100 printed Bibles, would be a fantastic resource for them.
Awesome. So you brought up the Sunday service, and I want to just go back for listeners who maybe weren't aware of that. Kuwaiti actually planted a Sunday service inside the prison, and anyone who wants to, but the graduates from his course can come and attend.
I actually think that he kind of considers it a church within the prison, and that's fed from the students, the people that get saved from the portable Bible school and the ones that go through that, and they're the ones that are coming in, and of course, encouraging the other prisoners to come also.
So you got to preach at that service.
Yep.
Have you ever preached in a prison before?
No, I haven't. Not out in a courtyard with the sun coming down and the prisoners all sitting there on the steps and on the ground in front of you, you know, wrapped around to the left and wrapped around to the right. And behind us, to keep the men and the women separated, they brought a group of women in, and they sat in chairs in the shade trees behind us. And so, yeah, it was an interesting service, very, very interesting.
What was going through your head when you took the podium?
Well, it was our first introduction to go into the prison. It was our first introduction to these people. They didn't know us. We didn't know them. And what came across to me was it was so calm. There was such a lack of tension and a lack of angst there, which you would think would be in a prison. And we later found out that so many of them have gotten saved through Kuwaiti's ministry and are being discipled, that it's just changed. It's revolutionized the attitude and the tone and the flavor inside this prison. In fact, one of the guards, one of the head guards, was so interested in what Kuwaiti was teaching, and I think probably after having taught in one of the classes, the guards have to sit around to make sure everything stays proper. I think they sat there and listened to the training, and this guy so enjoyed it and so valued it, he took the exams And he graduated from the portable Bible school himself, right along with the prisoners that he looks out for. So that was kind of exciting. But back to Sunday, we're there, and they've got all these people around, and so there was a calmness there that was surprising to me. What also was surprising to me is there was quite a few, a fairly large percentage of the prisoners who were pastors. People might say, a pastor in prison? What's the deal? Well, there's so many people that become pastors in Uganda and in Central Africa because it's a possible revenue stream. They're not called to it. They call themselves because they'll get a title and a job, and hopefully, if it's like they think, they'll be able to force the people through this prosperity gospel to give all of their money to them, and they'll get rich. In fact, one of the pastors was there because he had gone and prayed for a family a lot of times because they were having some health issues or problems, and he prayed for them, and they never had anything to pay him. So somehow he finagled and got their property, whether he got the paperwork or however, but he just commandeered their property, and he told the police that he deserved it. He deserved getting paid because he performed a service for these people. He prayed for them, and he should get paid for praying.
No.
So they brought it before a judge, and the judge didn't agree, and so he's in prison. And there are some that have now come out, and they want to go to Kuwaiti school and be trained properly and with biblical principles. So those were the things that kind of stood out to me.
I agree with you, Steve. I remember at the end of the service on Sunday, as we were walking around and shaking hands and greeting the prisoners, which you know, you would think in a prison you might feel taken back by, you might be a little concerned, a little scared of doing that. But as we walked, each one of them greeted, smiled, and looked at you with really an open heart. And I remember this one man kind of reaching over to me, and he whispered in my ear, and he said, you know, once Pastor Kuwaiti came, I felt so much freer in prison than I did on the outside.
Oh, wow.
And so you must think that they're really getting the word from Kuwaiti in his Sunday services and also in his Bible school.
So, Kent, while Steve was preaching, were you looking around? Did you notice anything?
I remember looking around, and you know, it reminded me a little bit of any church that you go into. There are a lot of people intently listening, looking. And then there's the few that are there maybe because somebody told them they should be there. But no difference than another church. They're out there looking closely, listening, and abiding in what everything is going on. And then you have the few that are not. But even those few that are not listening intently, they're getting the word. Somehow or another, they're getting the word.
And that church has a whole, they do a whole worship service, right? They do worship music or...
Absolutely.
That's a whole regular service, right?
And funny enough, one of the guards plays guitar. And so the guard is part of the prison worship team. And so you have some prisoners and you have a guard, and they're all worshiping and singing and praising the Lord.
Actually, you might even say it might be a full service, because while the church service is going on, the prison carries on with all of their other duties, because right on the back row, up underneath the overhang, one after another would be getting their head shaved, their weekly haircuts. And while the service was going on, there were people that were called out from the service during the service to go help prepare food or help to go do some gardening or various tasks that needed to be done or to go to their bunk or whatever. But this was all running parallel to the service that was going on. And so the fact that they really were as intent and as focused in the midst of all of the distractions really was a blessing.
In fact, you brought that up, Steve, and I remember some of the prisoners being called out and having to leave, and they were new prisoners there. Even though they were at the service, they were new either that day or the day before, and they were being called out because they had to get their yellow-orange scrubs for their prison garments.
Their uniforms.
Yeah, their uniforms, yeah, exactly.
And you guys also brought over a very portable and very innovative sound system for Kuwaiti to use in this part of his ministry. What was the response to that?
Oh, you know, it was that was a little surprising. Kuwaiti shared with us that he's having to yell because he's got no sound system in the portable Bible school, the teaching, and his voice is becoming hoarse. And so one of our donors said we'd like to try to help. And so we did a bunch of research and found this small JBL sound system that's got portable speakers and it's got a mixer and you can put all this stuff on it. And Kent and I disassembled it and put it in tubs and packed other things in the tubs and took these individual tubs with our suitcases on the airplane to get over there. And of course, reassembled it once we got there. In fact, Kent actually did some soldering. He was building an extension cord. You couldn't buy a long enough, thick enough extension cord, so we had to buy the pieces and actually assemble them. And so Kent was doing that. I guess it wasn't soldering. It was just
a little new electrical work while we were sitting out on the Bunga Garden Hotel there. We put it together so that we have it the next
day. So you have to be ready on a mission trip. You have to be ready to do everything. But
true field work.
Yeah. What was surprising was is how much that sound system meant to the prison leadership. And again, what's so important about that is because this prison with 450 people is kind of a pilot for Kuwaiti to prove that this is legitimate. It's not wrong teaching. It's biblical teaching. It's well run. It's well organized. It's well supported. And so it's this pilot program, and for the leadership and the commanding officer and everybody to be so engaged, it's really been very, very good. And so they were excited because, wow, their prison now had a sound system. And even though it's Kuwaiti's and ISM's, International School of Mission sound system, they were going to keep it and protect it there at the prison, which was one of my biggest concerns, that there would be such a disconnect that you couldn't leave anything there, and Kuwaiti was going to have to transport it, and that's why it had to be so portable, but it had to be strong enough. But I see now that Kuwaiti has so built a relationship, and there's such a partnership between Kuwaiti and the staff that you could leave anything there, and they'll guard it and protect it with their life. And so the fact that somebody cared enough to help them have a sound system, which goes along with something that surprised me, is there was a canopy. It's almost like what we would see here in America, almost like an outdoor wedding canopy. It's got removable steel legs and this white vinyl top to keep the sun off. It was a pretty good sized one. It was there as a comfort, as a courtesy to the prisoners, so that they didn't have to sit out in the sun and go to a class, because there are no classrooms in this prison. There's probably not even a cafeteria. It's the rooms and the courtyard. That's it. In fact, the kitchen is outside on a concrete slab that is off to the side, and we could see him preparing some sort of greens or vegetables or something, and that's the kitchen outside. So when it rains or when the sun's beating down, it's miserable. And Kuwaiti wanted them to be able to hear and to concentrate. And so out of his own resources, which I know are very limited, especially with him having to pay transport to get all the way out to this prison is quite far from his home, taking his wife to the doctor so often because of her illnesses and all the other challenges, he sacrificed and bought this canopy for them. And again, it's just one more thing that outsiders are doing for this prison, which makes these people who toil away in this prison in Uganda feel that they're valuable and somebody's caring about them. And so I just thought that was really cool. The sound system, of course, worked well. The people that led praise and worship, of course, loved having a microphone.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
So it was a good thing that we took it.
So I wanted to ask, were there any moments, and if so, where were you and what were you doing when you thought, this is why I'm here?
Kent and I probably have a different answer to that question. My answer would be is, Kuwaiti and I were walking, and I don't remember it was through the town or through the slum that we were walking in, and Kuwaiti looked over at me and he said, I've been listening to what you're saying. I understand what you've been saying. I'm beginning to get it. And that was a huge encouragement to me, because for a lot of years we've been going and we check the projects out, we get pictures, we get stories, we bring resources and help them. But one of the things on my heart, my passion is to see people grow. And mentoring is a great way to see people grow. And just because Kuwaiti is, if I could say this, at the top of the food chain when it comes to being a spiritual leader there in Uganda, in his area, he's continually requested, will you come speak in my church? Will you come? Will you come? Will you come? Will you come? And Kuwaiti knows the Bible so, so well. And he's such a great resource for teaching at ISM. And he does such a great job of working through the non-biblical cultural challenges that pastors bring to Bible school and think that it's biblical theology. He's just so good at that. But Kuwaiti came from a very dysfunctional home in the Congo. And because of that, it's left him with some baggage that impacted and that slowed him down in areas. But in that culture, you don't speak to somebody that's higher than you on something of this nature. You don't speak into someone's life. You just don't do that. And so Kuwaiti doesn't have anybody, and he's told me this many times, he says, I don't have anybody that talks to me like you do. And we're walking, and he looks over and he says, I'm getting it. He says, I'm understanding. And one of the things that he understood was that he's a child of God, and that even though he came from a horrible childhood where his father chased him with a machete, and the church that took him in for a while, they got distracted and started following their own financial wants and desires, and Kuwaiti graciously told him that that's not biblical, and they in essence kicked him out and left him high and dry when he was trying to get an education. And so everybody that had mattered to him in his life had kind of dropped the ball. And so that just leaves you with an insecurity that you have, whether you admit it or not. And so Kuwaiti needed somebody important to write a letter of recommendation for him to get an audience in front of the prison commission, and just so he could present them with this idea, this proposal of bringing this beneficial Bible school into the prison to change people's lives. In their culture, he couldn't even think of going and just doing that himself, because it just isn't done that way. And so for him to get this audience, I need somebody to write this introduction and help me to get this audience. And he couldn't get anybody to do it. And I now know that I think the Lord just kept anybody from doing it, because he finally came to the conclusion one day, the realization that, wait a minute, I'm a child of God. This is what Steve's been saying. I'm a child of God and I'm valuable. And I don't need anybody to do that for me. If God wants me to do it, then God's big enough to help me do it. And so he went straight to the commission himself, and they gave him an audience, and he proposed this new project, and they said, well, let's try it. And that's how it got started, and it proved to him that he doesn't have to be afraid. He doesn't have to think less of himself. He can he can realize who he is and that God can help him accomplish. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. He got a chance to see that verse in true action.
That's really cool to think about, you investing that in him years ago and then it coming all out and then knocking down all the dominoes that now this ministry is big and it's affecting lots of lives, and that's really cool.
It's been something we've tried to encourage him along a lot of years, my trips that go back, because I want him to realize who he is in Christ and that he's much loved, and God wants to do great and big things with him. And it's so fun to see those kinds of things start, those seeds that you've planted to start growing.
And I think it's really a testament, too, to, like, you were a domino in the middle, and you have supporters behind you who helped you get here, who helped you understand the calling God had on your life, and who send you, and who provide the sound systems, and who provide the Bibles, and I'm forgetting 100 other things that happened in order to get to this point where the prison ministry is flourishing and happening, and God's using it to reach people. But I think that's really cool to think about.
Amen.
When I was there with Steve a few weeks ago, Steve stayed back at the hotel, and Kuwaiti and I went downtown to do a little searching for some lumber and the cost of materials and what they would be for a potential future trip. And in my life with missionaries, I always think they should be put up on a pedestal above athletes or politicians and that sort of thing, which is still true. But on the other hand, I got to spend a few hours with Kuwaiti by myself and just talking, just chatting, and just finding out a little bit more about him and who he is, and just to get to know a missionary. Sometimes we give to missionaries, but we don't know who they are. We don't know that they have hurts and they have feelings and they have joys and praises and things. And they're no really different than us, other than the fact they have given up many of the comfort and things that we have to go out into the mission field and do what that God has called them to do. But they're no different than us. They have the same feelings. So it was a fun afternoon.
I agree. I've enjoyed every moment that I've spent just getting to know an ITMI partner. Those are really awesome opportunities. Were there any conversations with people that stood out in your mind? Could be a prisoner, could be a taxi driver, could be somebody where you were staying that kind of stand out as interesting.
There was a couple there that are having marital problems, and marriage in Uganda is not like marriage we see here. It's totally different, and the expectations, what the husband is supposed to do, what the man is supposed to do, and what the woman is supposed to do are somewhat different culturally than what our culture is here in America. And getting a chance to sit down with both the wife, who I've known for many, many years, and the husband, who I've only known for a few years. They're separated at this time, and so to sit down in their environment, in their culture, and have to depend on the Holy Spirit to give you wisdom and insight, not to accommodate their culture, but to not lose them in their listening to you just because you completely disregard who they are and where they're coming from. The husband is probably less mature than the wife is because he was an orphan and he lost both parents and he was raised by some distant relative, and he just has a lot of baggage because of the way he was raised and the way he takes care of children, the way he treats them, the harshness, because that's all he knew. And so to help him work through some of that was a blessed time for me, even though it was intense because so much is at stake. But to be given that opportunity and that conversation, it was special to me.
I recall when we left the prison, either it was on Sunday or maybe during the Bible class or after, we were leaving and one of the prison officers needed a ride back down to town. And so we took her, actually there were two of them, and we took them back to town. And sometimes the small things that you do mean a lot to those people. So we were able to take them back down to their work or to the home, which was quite a long distance away from the prison. So we got to chat with them on the way, got to know them just a little bit more. And while we were finishing up, we were able to exchange Facebook. And so now this has become another opportunity where we can share the Lord with them over Facebook, and at the same time helping maybe Kuwaiti with the relationship. So there's things that you do sometimes that you may never know that's going to build the kingdom.
So while you guys were in Uganda, you had the opportunity to visit a slum area. Tell us a little bit about your visit there and what Kuwaiti's connection was to that area.
One of Kuwaiti's students, or past students, is graduates, that planted a church in this area. This is an area that's about 30% refugees from DRC Congo. Unfortunately, it's kind of at the bottom of one of the many, many, many hills that make up what's called Kampala. When the rainy season comes and lots of rain comes down, these trenches and these gullies and all these dirt roads and these cracks, because they don't have good infrastructure, it really has nowhere to go. The people that don't have money, they can't live on the top of the hill where it's safe. So this slum area, and it's very, very dense, and they don't have services, so there's just a massive amount of garbage and trash and sewage everywhere. Kuwaiti took us into this to show us this church, to help us reconnect with this pastor, to maybe plan a future trip to go in and do some ministry or VBS or something in this area, but also for us to be able to get a few pictures to help people in America understand what it's really like living there. Obviously, you can't bring back the smell, and you can't bring back the loss of hope in some of the faces, but you can take a few pictures to kind of communicate that. So we were into this slum and walking down the road and walking through between the buildings and over the mounds of dirt and over the garbage and over the little bridges. And we came to an area that had a huge a trench. It's almost like what we might call a canal running down the hill, and there's so much sewage and garbage and trash and debris all over. It could be 12, 15 feet deep in places, and mud huts and everything built right up to the side of it. So you walked in a narrow path. It was muddy because it had rained, and there were children in the bottom of it, little kids, probably 4 or 5 years old, standing down in this water that's probably shin deep with all this garbage and sewage and whatnot, and it playing, and them not even knowing that that's wrong. It's water, they drink water, so this water must be fine. And as we walked further and further through this, Kuwaiti leading and this pastor leading the way, Kuwaiti began to be more and more vocal about the pain that he was seeing in these living conditions and the environment, and that there's got to be some sort of leadership here that have allowed this to happen, and that anybody that has any opportunity at all, they need to pull people together so this doesn't happen. Kuwaiti showed us on one side of the trench we were walking, and there was a building right up next to it, and you could put your hand out and touch the building and almost touch the edge of the trench. And of course, it was muddy, and we're walking over mud puddles and getting mud everywhere. But there was a water line on this building up about 4.5 feet. And that was the high point. They explained that when the flood comes down and all this trash blocks everything up and there's a lot of water, that ditch, that 10, 12-foot ditch, fills up and then comes up over the edge and flows all the way up to 4.5 feet on the side of this building, and that's bad enough. But on the other side of the trench, that's at a lower spot, and literally it would fill up the floors, up to the windows, up to maybe even the tops of the doors of a lot of the little shacks that these people lived in, and the outhouses that were on that side that had no lid to close them. And so all the stuff was overflowing, and it was flowing into houses and destroying and ruining everything that people had.
It's spreading disease.
And the more Kuwaiti saw it, the more vocal he got about, this is not right. People, we should do something. We're the leaders. We're the leaders that let this happen. We need to have some organization. And I've never seen that in Kuwaiti. It so impacted him that he couldn't be quiet, and he couldn't stop being an advocate for those who have no voice. And I think it goes along with this recognition that he's got a voice, God's given him a voice, and he can use this voice not for himself, but for other people. And I dare say that by the time we go back, Kuwaiti will have, on some level, adopted some part of this slum, and he's going to do what he can to bring God's truth and God's way and God's blessing somehow here, even if it kills him. He's going to do something. And so that's what stood out. I mean, the longer I was there, the more drained I became, the more overwhelmed and emotionally numbed by it just goes on and on and on.
I would agree, Steve. We walked for blocks and blocks and blocks, went around in the circle and kept going, and the slum just kept going. There seemed not to be an end. We, in fact, stopped of where we were and walked back because we did not want to walk the entire area. It was just too big. And I agree with you about Kuwaiti. You know, last year we were there and we were in a different slum. Kuwaiti wasn't as vocal. This year, he was very vocal to the people. Not to the government, but to the people. He wanted the people to rise up and change their ways. He wasn't blaming the government. He wasn't blaming someone else. He was asking them to look inside themselves. Both of these slums, there seems to be a trend in Kampala where the slums are in the valleys, in the ditches where all the water goes, where all the filth goes. And lo and behold, that's probably where most of the malaria is. So here we are standing around, and you have the widowers, you have the children, and there were a number of refugees from the Congo that were there. They're there living in the filth and the dirt and the slum of Kampala, where up on the top of the hill, you have the riches and the fame. Just a sad, sad thing to see.
That's truly heart-wrenching to think about living in those conditions.
The interesting thing is we believe that if people will seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, all these things will be added to them. And regardless of what the refugee status, regardless of the corruption in the government, regardless of the fact that you are an alien, regardless of the only place you can afford to live, regardless of all that, God is able to transcend in a special way all of that if we can just help them understand that not the Americans, not the government, not some family member, not some person of a different skin color is going to bail them out of this. But if they will seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, God will bless them. And this is Kuwaiti's heart too. This is why he trains pastors. This is why he sacrifices personally and as a family their finances and their resources so that he can continue to pour into the lives of other people, including those behind bars and those who have taught apostasy and heretical teaching. Kuwaiti wants to impact Uganda and the surrounding countries.
Well, I think our time is kind of winding down, and I want to close by asking you, what did the Lord teach you during the time that you spent in Uganda?
For me, between the couple that were having the marital problems, the poverty in the slum, the prisoners, the pastors that were in prison, it was just a huge reminder to me that if you don't do things God's way, if you allow yourself permission in this little small area, or this little small area, whether you're an American, a Ugandan, a refugee, or whatever, sooner or later, you're going to experience John 10:10. The enemy always comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Destroy marriages, destroy families, destroy cultures, steal joy, steal peace. So it just reminds me to be super vigilant and sensitive, to not giving myself permission, to not be obedient in the small things as well as the big things.
Thank you.
God seems to always surprise me in the little things and maybe the big things. You know, we talked a little bit before about the cost of the Bibles, and, you know, we go over there and God reduces the cost. Just a wonderful small example, but then I am completely surprised, I think Steve was surprised, by International School of Missions. The turnaround in a year's time was frankly God's work. For him to raise somebody up, come under Kuwaiti, and Kuwaiti has seemed to have allowed her to take some of the administrative reins over at ISM, then that relieved him of that responsibility and has allowed him to go into the prisons and maybe who knows what beyond. But what a fantastic way that God surprises in the little things and the big things. It's amazing.
He tends to come out of the blue with resources and goodness that we
absolutely
often don't expect.
Abundantly above all that we could ask or
yes.
even think.
Yeah.
Much better put, good. Yeah, by the Bible. Well, guys, it's been amazing to hear about your trip, and thank you so much for sharing it with us. It's just been a pleasure to hear about what God's been doing, so thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the ITMI podcast, and hopefully you were able to catch from Stephen Kent and these wonderful stories the many opportunities that there are to make a profound impact by partnering with one of our godly nationals or by helping us send our teams on these trips that are just jam-packed with value and benefits for God's kingdom. If you want to know more about Steve Kent or our Ugandan partner, Muhindo Kuwaiti, you can find out more on our website at intouchmission.org. See you next time.